97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, Kurt Heelan's going to join us coming up here in just a moment. Live here at RGS Exteriors. In fact, Kurt Heelan joins us right now on the Rain Gutter Guest Line. It's no secret that Utah's in an extreme drought. That's why Smart Rain is the solution for any commercial property concerned about water consumption and irrigation. Find out more at smartrain.net. Kurt, how are you?
Hey, Kurt.
I'm doing well. How's it going, guys?
Good. I tell you what, still enjoying every moment of that game last night because it was a fun one. Finally, we get a really close game that goes down to the wire, and now we get a debate what's the best defensive play in NBA Finals history after that block on the alley-oop.
That was one of the most amazing physical plays you've ever seen, just right? Like, tracking that, getting up, shutting down a strong 7-foot guy. This wasn't like you blocked some guard. It was a physically just an amazing play, and I think what's been good for whatever happens in this series, Giannis never has had that, the cultural cachet of some of the other big-name superstars, of Kevin Durant or even Steph Curry or James Harden or a bunch of guys. Like, he just doesn't have that casual fan cachet. He doesn't have he hadn't been on the biggest stages, doesn't have the endorsements and all that. I think this starts to change that. I think people get a real glimpse of what he does well and what makes him an amazing player.
A little bit worried. There's some concern. He did leave the game a bit early. Have we got to the bottom of what happened there, Kurt?
Not that I have heard yet. I know that there was some concern about his leg. I am not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what's going on there. There's a couple guys. Chris Paul seemed to be rubbing his knees a lot last night. I mean, I think a lot of that is just Drew Holiday hounding him for 94 feet. But, it's something to watch. I haven't heard anything. There's been nothing official yet. And the problem is this time of year, it's really hard, especially with the distance between the media and the team. It's just really hard to get a sense of what's real and what's not. And this time of year, teams are, you know, they've gone full on 1980 hockey, you know. It's a lower leg injury type of stuff on the it's really hard to read what's actually going on. Kawhi Leonard had a torn, you know, partially torn ACL. Like, yeah, it's a sprain. He's fine. Like, he might play. You know.
The Drew Holiday and his ability to hound Chris Paul certainly seems to be a nice adjustment. And certainly something that if he can continue that and continue to hound Chris Paul seems to be one of the things that has been working for Milwaukee. What else have you seen that the Bucks have been able to do to try to really slow down Phoenix after they went up 2-0?
They've done a better job dealing with the pick and roll. They struggled a little with it yesterday. Again, they kept Chris Paul out of trouble. Their size allows them, even when, again, you know, they're playing small. They don't have Brook Lopez out there. Giannis is 7 foot and stupid athletic, and they've got these other big guys. So they don't play small in the traditional sense, and that allows them to keep Ayton. You can't, you know, there's not a bunch of 6'8 guys out there that you can just start lobbing to Ayton over the top of. There's guys with enough length to really disrupt that. PJ Tucker's not that tall, but good luck moving him. So I think that they're able to disrupt Ayton a little, and then it just comes down to, you know, when Booker gets hot like he did in this game, they have a chance to steal stuff, but they're going to need a lot more. They need more out of Chris Paul and Ayton, ideally, but they're going to need a lot more Booker in this series because he's the one guy who's really, you know, they've had Middleton on him. They've put Holiday on him for stretches. They don't really have a good matchup for him. I'm not sure there's a great matchup for him.
I'm trying to picture who it was that Booker grabbed. I think it might have been Drew, but it would have been his sixth and final, and he would have been put on the bench. Is that a case of official swallowing the whistle, not wanting to boot the bigger star on the court?
I think so. I have no idea how that was not a foul. And again, like Tucker got one on the high five foul on Ayton, on Crowder, where Crowder shot the corner three. You actually are allowed on those plays to, if you don't connect bodies and the ball is released and you touch the guy's hand, it's called the high five, it's allowed. The hand is part of the ball. And if he's released it and you kind of just catch his hand a little on the follow through, that's not supposed to be a foul. They got a couple of those. Jay Crowder earned an Emmy last night with his with his acting performances at points. But I think so. I think in the case of Booker, I mean, I just don't know how. I don't have another explanation for that not being a foul. That was that. I get that the in general, they you don't want to take the star off the court, and so you let some borderline stuff go. But guys, I don't think that was borderline. That was pretty clearly a foul.
Yeah, no doubt. Kurt Helin from NBC Sports and ProBasketballTalk.com joining us. And now the series is all square. Home court seems to be holding suit throughout the course of this series. You go back to Phoenix. And with these, I hate saying small market, but, you know, it has more of a collegiate-like feel to it at some of these arenas. And it seems like home court really plays a strong part. Do you anticipate Phoenix winning Game 5 and then this thing shifting back to Milwaukee with the Suns up 3-2?
I kind of think so. I mean, as much as I think the Bucks have figured some stuff out and you know, done some stuff right, I thought the Suns did a lot of things right. They have to keep the Bucks out of transition. They've got to turn them into a half-court offense, which they did a pretty good job of last night, honestly. The Bucks only, like, I think it was 12.4% of their possessions started in transition, which is, you know, they want to be up closer to 20% when they're thriving, because when Giannis is playing downhill in transition, you're doomed, whether he's kicking it out or scoring. They did a good job of that, and Middleton was – when all that happens, it becomes Middleton's job to make them pay. And Holiday. Holiday struggled. They weren't hitting their threes. Middleton saved them last night. But I thought the Suns did so much stuff right, and I think that if they replicate that at home – you know, there was a couple times, right, where they got up 7 or 9, and you're like, uh-oh. They just need a couple more buckets, like a stop and a bucket or two, and this thing's to 11 or 13, and blow it open might be the wrong term, but like they're going to make this gap too big to make up. And they turn the ball over, or they'd get sloppy, and I don't think they do that at home.
What's interesting to me is watching Milwaukee and their starters shoot 3 of 21 from 3 and 24% as a team, and P.J. Tucker gives you 0 points, and Milwaukee still wins. So that tells me that Milwaukee's probably still got more in the tank to take the Phoenix if they need it.
I like I said, I think they figured out what they need to do. It's a limited Brook Lopez. I mean, the advantage they have of Giannis at the 5 and using him as a – they finally went back to it late in the game. Giannis is a screener for Holiday or Middleton. That's devastating, right? Like, there's a role guy you might want to have trouble stopping. So, and then if you can get just some shooting, I mean, Connaughton hit at least a big one down the stretch, but just some shooting. I think the Bucks are the better team, but I still don't, with two games still to come in Phoenix, I'm not convinced the Bucks can win this thing. Even if I think they are slightly the better team.
Kurt Helin right here on the Zone Sports Network as we get ready for not only the NBA Finals in game number 5, but you've got the Olympics coming up, and we'll talk more about your concern level for Team USA. But the one thing that's kind of jumped out at me as you look at Milwaukee, you got 3 players that were over 40 minutes, some over 42 minutes in that game last night. I know these guys are finely tuned athletes and they're relatively young, but does that start to take a toll on guys throughout a 7-game series?
A little bit, but less so in the finals because there's longer breaks between games. When it was the conference finals and it was every other day, you could see it start to wear on teams. I think the Clippers were the most obvious example where for a full month they were every other day. And by the end, you could see, you know, Paul George was putting balls off the front of the rim. It gets to guys. In the finals where, yeah, they're playing a lot of minutes, but now they don't play again until Saturday. They get a couple days off. One of them's a travel day, but they get some extra rest and recuperation in there. It's less of an issue, I think. Now, one thing to look forward to, by the way, or think about, it's every 3 days except for Game 7. Game 6 will be next Tuesday. Game 7, if it happens, would be Thursday. There's a one-day break because they have to get it done before the Olympics opening ceremonies. So they don't have to, but they really would prefer not to match up with that on television. So that one-day break, it'll be interesting. It's like you have to start thinking about – in the middle of game 6, does the coach have to think about keeping guys fresh for 2 days from then?
Well, Kurt, we continue to have issues with this Olympic team and some bad news coming down this morning as Bradley Beal entered into protocol with COVID, and now it's just announced that Jeremy Grant has been put into protocol. So does that mean they cannot participate in the Olympics, and what happens if they can't?
First off, Grant apparently did not test positive, so this is he was in contact, whether it was Beal or somebody else. I'm shocked, by the way, that you can get COVID in Vegas. I just assumed that there would be everything would be fine. If Beal tested positive, I would think that he might be out. They would pull up one of the guys who's been with the team through the select team process. They bring in all the young stars from around the league, and three of them have been up with the team. Darius Garland would make a lot of sense because it's a similar position. You plug him in. They've kept these guys with them because there's three guys, Holiday, Booker, and Middleton are all still playing in the finals, so they haven't caught up to Team USA yet. So they've had these three other guys. I think that they just keep one of them. But, I mean, it does hurt. Bradley Beal is a – it's not exactly secret. Bradley Beal can light it up, man. Like, Bradley Beal could just go get you buckets. That will be missed. I mean, the ability to create matchup issues would be nothing against Darius Garland or whoever they would keep on the roster in that case. They're not going to pull somebody new in. They're just going to pull one of select guys. But it's still a downgrade.
So there's obviously concern. You lose back-to-back games to the teams that they lost to, and we had Joe Ingles on this morning, and don't think he wasn't taking a victory lap around that exhibition win. But with that said, there's a lot of people that are saying, hey, look, it's exhibition. It's going to be fine. As you mentioned, you got three players coming in, and Drew can help out with your perimeter defense, and Booker gives you another scoring threat. Do you? Where's your concern level about this team winning a gold medal here in a couple weeks?
Simmering. It's not like full level boil. I'm not reaching for the panic button, but the red flags are up. Like they have not looked good enough defensively. Let me rephrase that. They did against Argentina, but Argentina has the only current NBA player on that roster, I think, is Campazzo, who's not it's a little different than our, I think we get a better test again on Friday night against another game against Australia where, they get a roll out a deeper, better team. Their defense hasn't been sharp enough. And part of what they've done when they've thrived is just shut everybody down defensively, right? Like they're just these great athletes. And then they turn those into transition points because while the rest of the world have skill guys and the skill level is up, they just don't have the depth of athletes we can roll out. But we haven't seen that from them. And so we'll see if they've started to look more cohesive as a unit. If we start to see more of that defense on Friday night, and then I don't know if it's Saturday or Sunday when they turn around again and play against Spain.
Kurt Elan right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. I tell you what, though, that Australian team, that's a really likable team. Like, I know we're supposed to be rooting for America, but you look at that team, that's a fun team to watch.
Patty Mills is the Giannis Antetokounmpo once it gets to international ball, isn't he? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. That guy just steps up in international play and has for years. It's not just like, wow, he had a good game. And he's always been an international force. And they are. They're really – they move the ball. They played smart. You can also – both them and Nigeria, who just has not only like seven NBA players, but they had a longer run-up in training camp to when the U.S. had been together 4 or 5 days before that scrimmage. You could see the cohesion, right? You could see that, especially with Australia, you could see that these guys have played in these kind of competitions with each other in some, the core of them in some form for 5 years, 8 years, whatever it is. And they just know, there's a comfortableness with he's going to be here and I got to get him the ball here. Oh, he's going to read that and make this cut. That's just not there with Team USA right now, where they're playing next to each other and not with each other. And that's the thing that they are going to, that's really the hardest thing to get together, but it's really what they need because the margin for error for Team USA just isn't there anymore. Like the rest of the world is too good for for us to just roll out the basketball and win. There's, we don't get to play 1992 Angola again. Like, the teams are good.
Hey, Kurt, before we let you go, can you kind of build a timeline for Jazz fans on when they could possibly expect an announcement from either the Jazz or Mike Conley in a contract or some type of movement?
I doubt it would probably be pretty close to August 1st around then. I mean, they can do this whenever in theory. And I'm sure that there's been some conversations, but it's a weird, it's another thing that's a weird year, but the draft comes up on the 29th, right? 29th is the draft.
Yeah.
And everybody's focus is kind of there. There's obviously going to be trades and player movement then. And then I think after that, they'll try to get it done pretty quickly. Free agency opens August 1st, and I would think in early August they'll figure out what they're going to do and how they're going to make, you know, whatever the number ends up being, whatever they're going to do, I think you'll see that announcement then, and I'm sure there's conversations going on. But the Jazz's front office right now has to be thinking more. They just have to be more draft-focused. They've got to get their final prep in, and again, right now there's just – everybody's talking trades, but there's just – everybody's blowing smoke. It's a Cypress Hill concert out there right now. There's just smoke everywhere.
That might be your best line all in quite some time. I love it. Hey, well, certainly appreciate it. Always fun catching up with you, Kurt, and look forward to talking to you again here next week.
Take care, guys.
Thank you, Kurt.